Welcome to the Internet Advisor, the place where you don't have to be a geek to find answers to your computer and Internet questions. Each week since 1998, the Internet Advisor crew has been bringing you knowledgeable and interesting guests from the digital world and talking about the hot topics. During our second hour, we try to focus on answering your questions in ways that maybe even your grandma can understand. The door is always open for you at InternetAdvisor.net, our homepage, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts for this week's edition of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Internet Advisor. So glad you made room in your day. Give us a little time to talk with you. We got a great show lined up. We're going to be getting some exciting news from Cal, who stood in line on Black Friday. We got to find out if he came home with a trophy or not. No, not a deer, a TV. We'll be talking about that and discussing a lot of other things, including Windows 8 and the cloud. Should you be depending on it? All that coming up on the Internet Advisor. Well, I'm delighted to say we've got the whole crew in the house today. Gary Baker is with us here, as he has been for the last about 15 years. Gary, good to have you on board.
It's great to be here. It's great to be back. I've been off for a few weeks, traveling around the Midwest with my son playing lacrosse.
Proud father.
Outside of Michigan, and so it's kept me off the air for a while.
I thought you were working.
yes.
Working at being a great dad.
That's what it was. Right. Working at certainly at that.
That's excellent. Good. And I hope he did well as well on the road.
He did. He did extremely.
Excellent.
Extremely
well. Father speaking. Okay. Ed Riddell, good to have you too, Eddie.
Always good to get out of the cold.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? We were kidding about this on the way down here, that you'd be on a roof repairing.
Yes.
I would, for some reason, if we had all these warm days, it would always be, I would be up there hanging up the lights in the Arctic breeze, you know, being blown off the ladder as I'm hanging. That's just the men, I guess. We don't take the advice of our wives. And with us, Mr. Cal Carson, a survivor of Black Friday. Sir, good to have you. One piece.
Well, Mr. Foster, it's so great to be back here. I've been in Bedford Falls all weekend for this Black Friday event, and I got to tell you, I never will tell you again what this was all about. It was just an amazing experience.
You let this guy get on stage for one performance, and he comes away.
So I want to hear that. I haven't heard the whole story about you were in a play recently.
Yeah, it was a two-week run. It was
driving Miss Daisy. Tell us a little bit about it.
I don't know. I mean, it was a different experience for me. I wanted to take I started community theater with Rosedale Community Players about 2 years ago, and I took on a small role in a big ensemble cast, and it was a ball. I really enjoyed it. And then one of the members of that organization is also a member of the Barefoot Productions organization out in Plymouth, Michigan, and she says, "Hey, we're going to be doing Driving Miss Daisy, and I think you'll be perfect for this." And I go like, "I don't think so." And she goes, "No, come on, I'll do an audition."
She recognized you as much of a character as we already knew.
Yeah, but the only thing she didn't know is that my memory is not as great as everything else.
That would be a challenge, yeah.
And you go from a page and a half for one play to 38 pages in another play, and it's like, wow, this is a lot to remember.
But you did a great job, right? What's your character?
I was Hoke, the chauffeur for Miss Daisy. And then Dave Fidewa was the bully, and then Sandy Marolis, which is her first time ever being on the stage since high school.
Wow.
And she was Miss Daisy. And according to people, it was a great play. I just went out and did what I had to do.
So are you going to remember us little people when, you know, I have to come to L.A. to visit you?
You know, I don't know if it's ever going to go that
Morgan
far.
Morgan Freeman, watch out.
But I will tell you, it was really kind of funny because we had six performances, and I think it was the second or third performance, and I actually had four people come up and ask me for my autograph.
I love it.
Wonderful.
And I was like, I was totally taken off guard by it, and I had no idea what do you sign, you know? And but you know, hey, I gave him something, and hopefully I told him, I said, now when you go out this door, take this and go to the Tim Hortons down the block, and if you give them a dollar and this, they'll give you a cup of coffee.
<That's right. laughs> All right, now I've got to hear the Black Friday story though.
Okay, so here's the deal. So Rick Broider comes in here last show, and he goes like, hey, I'm evaluating this Vizio. It's 60 inches. It's sitting on my, you know. And then he says, Walmart's going to have it on sale for $688. And I go like,
wow.
Ping.
What a
price.
Because
60-inch Vizio. By the way, folks, this was top of the line, and that's what Rick had said. It was really good.
LED.
60-inch. Wireless.
LED, internet ready, rock and roll, thin as.
Soul.
Slick. So then I go and I say, okay, great. So I go to the internet because I always shop on the net on Wednesday because I had heard it's going to get released on Wednesday. Uh-huh. And I sign on and go to the Walmart website and sold out.
Oh, my Lord. When did you go on?
This is on Wednesday afternoon.
Wednesday?
So this was an online sale?
That's the online sale.
So they had it on sale for $688, but it was sold out. So I go like, okay, fine. So I forgot about it. I'll let it go. Mm-hmm. Then the Mrs. is going through the sale papers, and she goes, hey, isn't this TV you were looking for at Walmart? I go, yeah. She goes, it's going to be on sale at 10 o'clock on Friday. I go, really? Now, I've never done brick-and-mortar Black Friday. Matter of fact, I avoided like the plague. Sure, but I go, like, what the heck? I'll just tool out there. So the first plan was, since it's going to be at 10 o'clock, I'll be there at 8 o'clock. Okay, first failure in the plan, should have been there at 6:30 because that's when the first person was in line.
Oh.
They had 17 of them. There was 42 people in line.
Ahead of you?
Ahead of me.
Oh. Now, did you ask them what they're there for? Were they all there for the TV?
So I asked the guy that's running the Walmart line, I go like, what's the other people after number 17 there for? He said, well, I told them, but they're just waiting in case we have extra. I go like, thinking. Now, in the next row, and this was in the grocery department where you went to line up.
Uh-huh.
In the next row were the mixed beats. They had the 51-inch plasma on sale for $478.
Ooh.
And they had 22 of them
Uh-huh.
And guess what? There's only three people in line there. So I went in that line and I got a little card and I was waiting for the 10 o'clock time to come. Uh-huh. At 10 o'clock, they started handing out the cards.
Uh-huh.
But in the middle, in the main row of this place, there were stacks of Wii's, there were stacks of, you know, surround sound, there were stacks of this, that Walmart people were standing around till 10 o'clock because that's when the sale started.
Uh-huh.
At 10 o'clock, you might as well have been in a shark tank and tossed bloody meat into them because the people went berserk.
Oh, and folks, we got to find out what Cal actually walked away with, and we will return to talk about that and a whole lot of other stuff that we're going to be talking about today, including some interesting comments about whether you should buy a tablet and just exactly what you should watch out for when you're looking for one if you are going to get that. All that coming up on the Internet Advisor as we continue our exciting story of Black Friday and Cal Carson. Hey, thanks so much for coming aboard here for the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown. We've got Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson in studio. And just want to say I appreciate your downloading this podcast and enjoying it. We tape them every week, very often, on during the sports season in particular, football and basketball, with Michigan State University being a team that WJR 760 AM in Detroit, which is our flagship station, our home station. They are the sponsors for those. They broadcast their games. Very often this time of year, we're not on live on that station, but we're still on the whole network, and that is the Michigan Talk Network, and we're heard in Grand Rapids, Lansing, Saginaw, Kalamazoo, and Muskegon, and by wise folks like you who have, they subscribe to the podcast or go to our website regularly and download it there, so thank you very much for that.
Or you could go to iTunes and get it as well.
Yes, that's the best way to do it. Go to iTunes and subscribe to it, or if you're on a Windows phone, you can go through one of the podcast things, or wherever, an Android phone, wherever you are. Subscribe to it. But you're right. iTunes is a great, very easy way to do it. Now, Cal, let's get back. We have left our hero. There is blood in the water at Walmart. The sharks are closing in on him, and he's holding a little coupon there that says he's eligible for one of those pieces of meat this floating by.
Yes, I'm actually holding a coupon not for the 60-inch, but I'm holding a coupon for a 51-inch.
TV.
So I figure what I was going to do was go up to the register because I looked at the line and I said to myself in a jaded sort of way, somebody's credit card's not going to clear. Ooh. And when it doesn't clear, I'm going to walk up to him and say, here's $10. Give me your coupon. I'll buy the television.
Ooh.
No way.
Ooh.
Way.
So I go up. So as the feeding frenzy is going on, I get out of that way because it's just too ugly to be seen. I mean, they have one policeman in the building, and he basically is looking at it going like, that looks interesting.
Yeah, he's watching out for himself. He's protecting himself.
I go up to the register, and after about two people clearing through, I decided, you know something? This really isn't worth it. And I went home without a television.
Oh, really?
Because I figure, you know something? There's going to be other sales.
Yeah.
And it's just ridiculous to go through that type of madness for a device.
No, we're so close.
No, the story cannot end that way. I want you to tell me that someone at the register actually, their credit card didn't, and you gave them $10.
Three people went through. Three people cleared. I just gave up at that time.
You had 14 more.
Yeah.
You
could
have.
They didn't all go up at the same time.
Oh, my God. All right.
But if someone is looking for a 51-inch television, I have a coupon for one. Yeah, and I would have went with the, you know, three things got me out of this. Number one, Rick Broida started this madness. Shame on him. Second of all, a good friend of mine was over at my house, and I was looking at the wall, and I said, you know, I'm going to put a 55-inch up there. And he says, no, you know, you could put a 60 up there. And then the third person that's responsible for it is my wife, who said, you know, that 60 does sound like a good idea, which shocked me to death because normally women aren't, like, jumping in on the old electronics bandwagon, but she was all up for it.
So I'm just curious. What do you guys
think
about this?
Somebody told me about a huge one. I don't remember what it was.
They had like an 80-inch in the Walmart store.
Okay.
But also at Best Buy, I believe there is a 90-inch Sharp.
I think that's the one I heard about for $10,000 or
no,
something?
No, it's only, like, about $7,000 or $8,000.
Oh, is that all?
Yes. Okay. By two, they're small.
Paid, but bigger than
I
life. I
don't pay that much for
heard.
A used car. Yeah.
I don't think I have 90-inch wall space.
You can always make 90-inch wall space
but wait
by
a minute,
either
guys.
Reducing the floor.
Let's step back.
Break up your
what is this
something.
Madness? What do you think about that? I mean, you talked about the atmosphere there as being bizarre. The people like with glaze. I mean, we hear stories about that. You were there firsthand. What did it look like?
Here's two things. This is my own personal editorial, so I'm going to throw it out there. Number one, this was on Thursday. This was Thanksgiving. I actually left family to go see about a Black Friday sale on Thursday, not Friday.
Okay. Wow. And at just, 8 o'clock in the evening. Though.
At 8 o'clock
so
in the evening.
Most
right?
of the time, people are almost comatose
then.
Oh, you know,
so. People are working on their turkey sandwiches at around 8 o'clock.
Right. They
so
wake up. And
the real reason why he left is that his stomach was grumbling and he wanted more warm gravy and turkey on his
sandwich. I walked away from the smells of Thanksgiving. I walked away from the best tasting key lime pie.
This is what I saw one commentary that said, isn't this madness that on Thursday we give thanks to God for all the wonderful things that we have in our lives, and then we will cut one another's throats to get more stuff?
It's nuts.
That night.
And the other thing about it, it's like I'm saying to myself, you know, it's really bad that the retailers want money so bad that on Thanksgiving they make their people work and come in. And then, I was going to curse them for that. But then I thought to the other side of the game and give them a break. You know, those sales wouldn't go on if we didn't show up.
Yeah.
And that is true.
Yeah. And I actually talked to a couple people that had, I didn't talk to the people themselves, but had friends that said, I'm going in because it's time and a half. And
oh, yeah,
by
in terms
that
of the
time,
workers. Yeah.
And the work, a lot of the workers were saying, I'll work. Yeah. A couple of them, I guess,
with this economy,
double time.
I believe that with this
economy. See, on the other side of the coin, I've heard a lot of workers saying, you know, I really don't want to go in. I'm going, but I don't want to.
I'm sure they're all on the board.
You know, there's a point where we have to really say, you know something, really, there's times for sacred days.
I agree.
Not necessarily because it's religious, but just because
no.
We need to stop and take a breath, you know?
You know, and that's why I say crazy. The irony of this is that the day was initially, and then nationally, was a day of giving thanks for what you have. You know, whether it's security or family or whatever else, a lot of the most precious things, which are intangible around us. And then it's been kind of spoiled, I think, in many ways by this whole atmosphere that now has seeped into Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, you know, they start calling it Brown Thursday, believe it or not.
Serious.
I've heard many references to it. Brown Thursday. Because it's not quite Black Friday.
Oh, God. But I want to talk about something.
I thought it was Gray Thursday. Yes.
Jeez. I want to talk about something, Cal, though, that just to step aside from that madness. We've got a lot of people who are listening who are thinking about buying for their families, electronic devices in particular. Let's talk about tablets. Tablets are a big thing now, whether it's the iPad Mini, the new one out from Apple, mm-hmm. or whether it's the iPad itself, or whether it's the Samsung, the Nexus, I think. Is it Nexus 10?
Yes. Right, and there's
the Nexus 7.
The Galaxy Tabs.
Galaxy Tabs. Yeah. You've got...
So there, and there's some really decent
the
Android...
Nook. The Nook HD,
really,
yep.
Really decent
Amazon
Android
Fire
tablets.
HD, yeah.
But there's an awful lot of kind of e-readers that masquerade as tablets, aren't there, Cal?
Well, I wouldn't even call those e-readers either. You have e-readers, which are like the Nook and the Kindle Fire and those mm-hmm. sort of things. Mm-hmm. And they're e-readers. They're for reading books. And they may do a few other things, but they're primarily for reading books. And they're mm-hmm. great at doing that. And henceforth, that makes them the low price that they are. Mm-hmm. On the other end, you have these wonderful tablets like the Apple tablets. You have the Nexus. Mm-hmm. You have the Galaxies. You have all those ones that are out there. Mm-hmm. And they're great at doing what they do because they do multiple things. And henceforth, it goes to the old paradigm that my mom used to tell me, you get what you pay for. So they're higher priced because they do more.
And they can be readers if you wanted them, too, because you have all that horsepower behind them.
Exactly.
And you have brilliant displays.
Yes, right. They will do that.
I mean,
plus,
the same reason why people had computers and then they could, but I could do this with them as well because they're basically like a high-powered ATM or a, you know,
whatever,
a cash register
they're
machine.
They're a full-service electronic device.
No, you're very right. As a matter of fact, some people are using what things call the Square, that little device that goes on the top of an iPad and other devices as well, into your smartphones now that you can use as a credit card reader. So we have been able to expand the function. But your point, Cal, and folks, is it's like as you're going out there and you're wanting to get something for somebody, take into account, we said this before in terms of buying in general, what is it you want to do for? What do you want to do with it? And then to understand that you do get what you pay for.
Because
so if it's a tablet's $100 and it's going to do all these things, it's going to be underpowered. The screen is going to look horrible. You're going to connectivity issues.
It's not
a whole shooting
horrible. It's just not as good as it could be. Right.
So you were saying
you can use them.
You tried out a number of these, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at a lot of them, and some of the smaller retail chains, your drugstores, some of your your Kmart's, those sort of things, they are selling tablets now. Now these tablets are usually some brand name that you've never heard of, and they're going for very cheap, but they don't do the functions that you're expecting from
it. You find them in office supply stores. You find them in a lot of places like that. So please, buyers beware when you go out. Look, not all tablets are created equal. When we come back in just a minute, I'm going to ask you guys your comment. How much should we depend on the cloud? How much do you depend on the cloud? And how much should we, as computer users, be depending on it? So glad that you've joined us for the Internet Advisor. And by the way, if you have a question that you would like to have answered, during these times when we don't have live call-ins, a great way to do it is to simply go to the InternetAdvisor.net homepage and click on the Contact Us button. And we could, by the way, we have a surprise coming for you on that. That there's going to be something very special happening there. When you go in, you may notice that sometimes in the past, you've gone to sites that have a security function called CAPTCHA. And to be honest with you, I have a terrible time with it. Maybe it's my eyes, but I can't read those fuzzy letters that they've got there
you
very often.
Captured, eh?
Yeah. two or three times I got to do it until I finally get it right. Anyway, there is a new form. We've actually talked with these people before, and Reed Tatoris is going to be on with us this coming week to talk about, are you a human? No, Cal, we're not questioning whether you are a human or not. But when you apply, when you try to get into a site, they have security questions they ask very often.
It really is for protection. Right?
It is for protection.
Absolutely.
And it's a really...
should do something.
But this is fun. This is really fun. Rather than annoying CAPTCHA way, this is a fun way of doing it. It's called Are You a Human? And that will be something we'll be using starting this coming week. But when you go to contact us, you will click there, put your email in, and then you'll get your question to us. Another way of doing it is simply to send an email to advisors, A-D-V-I-S, A-D-V-I, O-R-S, at internetadvisor.net, and that'll get to us as well. Now, guys, when I before we went to the break, I was asking you the question, and let me repeat it again. How much do you depend on the cloud? and how much should we depend? Now, just quickly, the cloud is something that's being sold all over the place. You know, back up your pictures. For instance, if you're on an iOS device, Cal, we have...
from Apple.
iCloud.
From Apple, from iCloud. If you're on a Microsoft device, you have
SkyDrive.
SkyDrive. Yep. And if you're on a Google device, Eddie, it's...
I don't remember.
I think it's Google Drive there. But you know, you have these places where they will give you 5 gigabytes of storage or however many. If you have Dropbox, which I have, for instance, you can store things up there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can buy more space, et cetera. So the cloud is being sold more and more. A lot of us, with our smartphones, that's where all of our backup is. Is to the cloud there. So if our phone's stolen or broken or damaged, we can simply go there and it comes right back down. So, guys, we are beginning to depend a lot on the cloud. How much should we be depending on that?
Well, now, when we say we're depending on the cloud, it depends on, again, your definition of the cloud. Mm-hmm. And because you're right, all of those are true cloud computing functionality, right? But we've been... relying on the internet for years, mm-hmm. and that's servers managed by somebody else somewhere else.
So it's been going on.
Right. So mm-hmm. How much different is it than a true dynamic provision cloud computing functionality to anybody else that happens to have functionality somewhere other than on your computer or in your own data center? If
my
you happen to be
God,
a company.
Gary, just, you know.
My head hurt from that answer.
I really do love you because you can take the simpleness that Mr. Foster just put out there and re-geek it to a point where now everyone's going like, what the heck did he say?
And then they pay me money to translate that. You know?
that's IT. That is IT.
Well, I mean, a lot of corporations have had cloud-based storage internal
for years.
And now what's happening, it's being made available on the internet for the general consumption and
consumers.
For corporations as well. Because a lot of corporations are like, why should I pay to have my own disk farm, if you will, or internal storage, I can throw it out to the internet at save because it's so cheap.
If I use a simple analogy then, instead of having our own safe in our house where we keep our valuables, for instance, on an external hard drive, right, Cal?
Yes.
Or on a thumb drive, or you burn it off onto DVDs, which many of us have been doing. Instead of having that safe in our own house now, essentially, the safe is somewhere else.
Better analogy.
Go ahead.
Not the safe is somewhere else. You've bought a safe deposit box in a huge vault somewhere else.
There you go.
Don't put the money under your mattress. Go to the bank.
But some people would say that's not really wise. That we're all becoming very dependent on it. And just this week, I think there was an outage at Microsoft. Apple had some outages recently. Siri hasn't been able to talk to people because of it.
And there have been bank robberies too. But they're still safer than your money in your mattress.
Now, it's not that it's not safe. It's about not putting all your eggs in one basket. Because you need to have a backup in multiple places.
That's essentially what we're talking about, is backup.
I'm saying you're going to have the safe deposit box somewhere, but at the same time, you're going to have something net squirreled away somewhere else as well because of two reasons, in my opinion. Number one, I want to be able to get to it fast and quick. Mm-hmm. And over the internet, sometimes that could be an issue. Not all the times, but sometimes it could be. Second of all, the big concerns you don't have to worry about. Your Googles, your SkyDrives, your Dropboxes, those are fine. But some of the smaller concerns, if they ever went out of business, they're going to send you a note that's going to say, get all your stuff back in the next 2 weeks because we're going to be gone.
That has happened.
And if you can't yank it back in those 2 weeks, you're going to be out of luck.
And people are kind of counting, though. It's like with the bank. I deal with a bank that there'll never be a crash like 1929. Essentially, where banks went under. And what, matter of fact, we saw it not that many years ago where a lot of banks were going out of business.
I mean, 30 years ago when GM was solid as Sears, both of which have gone through some sort of issues with bankruptcy. Not to say that you shouldn't do these things, but you always want to have backup.
Eddie, were you going to say something? I'm sorry. In terms of
So I will tell you that it has nothing to do with being safe, I don't believe.
Okay.
Right? I've never heard of a situation where any of the big companies have lost your data. They're backed up in two or three places and in different parts of the country. right? So if there's a flood and it wipes out one whole data center, they got it backed up in a different data center. So
excuse me, an example of that was during the world when the 9/11 happened, there were companies in New York and the World Trade Center that lost everything, literally physically everything went psht. But they were also across the river in New Jersey, they were mirroring everything that they were storing there. So
and what Gary is saying is absolutely true, and you know something, in 99.9% of cases, you're not going to have a problem. But the way they get that information in multiple places is through something called replication. So if the original is crap, then the replicated copies will be crap.
Mm, that's
so
true.
I believe that you can never hurt yourself by having a multiple backup.
Okay, now that's a very good point.
And I agree with
what Cal is saying. Yes, folks, this is a very important point to come back to. And I'm curious now. Let's poll you guys in here. Where do you save your backups on, Gary?
So I have a number of different places, right? And one of them is local. But I also realize that when the backup that's local, if somebody came in while I was gone and stole my laptop, they'd probably also take the hard drive.
That's because you're storing your local backup improperly.
Right.
Well,
that's
a good point. No, I just want to ask you where you do it.
Which a lot of people do.
I do. I do.
And if there's a fire, it will take down my laptop and my external drive.
Right.
You are correct.
Which is why I have other places that I put it, and I don't put it all in one place. And
do you put it on the cloud as well? I mean,
absolutely. That's the place to put it because it's cheap.
Okay, but you also have hard drives with your stuff on it.
But I have them locally as well. I think
when you say locally, you have them other than in your own house.
No, I do have them in my own house, and I have them in the cloud.
And in the cloud, okay.
Right, and I have Dropbox, I have SkyDrive, and I use iCloud.
Okay, Ed, how about you?
I have an external hard drive, and I have a flash drive that I keep in my Jeep. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And for on that, data.
And that flash drive has your data on it.
Yes.
Okay.
Doesn't, you know, and the other one goes in a fire safe. I mean, I had that was a weird request on my wedding day was to have a fire safe. You know, so I have a fire safe.
Nothing says I love you like a fire safe.
That's right.
Like a prenup and a fire safe.
To have, to hold, and to turn the combination over to me.
And I really don't. And, you know, but that won't help very much with floods because it's not waterproof. It's just fire safe. But and what do firemen use? A hose, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it does have some seals on there, but I don't think it could be dunked.
Okay.
And I don't use the cloud that much.
You don't use
the cloud? Except for exchanging data like the old FTP servers. That's about it.
Okay. Cal, how about you?
Lightweight with the cloud. I use things like maybe Dropbox for moving data around with. Back things up to externals. Store them in a safe deposit box and also locally at home.
Mm-hmm.
And also legacy stuff onto tape as well, which is an old way of doing it, but it stores really well for me. Those are ways that I do it. But I am a big proponent of storing it on a local drive and putting it in a safe place. And you don't have to put it in a safe deposit box. Even if you put it in a neighbor's house, take it to work, lock it in the desk drawer, that's fine. The one thing that Gary is bringing up that's very, very important, though, and it is that with cloud storage, using something like CrashPlan, Carbonite, or any of the other ones, it will do it automatically for you, where the other way you have to remember to do it. And if you have no discipline, you'll forget. Mm-hmm. And we all do.
And so it'll be very important when you're setting your computer up, folks, if you get a new computer, remember to set up the backup on it. And I just got this Windows 8 program going. I'm still trying to figure out how to backup on it.
Oh, when you go to buy that computer, budget for a backup solution as
very,
well.
Very good point for a 500-gigabyte drive to put right along next to it. All right, we'll be back in just a minute to continue talking about more of the considerations for your buying season. Once again, thank you for inviting us into your home, your car, wherever you happen to be listening to our podcast. Delighted to have you make us part of your life. And with me in studio, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson. We've been talking about some of the challenges of buying a new piece of hardware, particularly a computer for this year, because there's so many choices that are out there. Last week, we did the second hour. You weren't here, Gary, for it. We did the second hour of the program with my wife, Ginny, on with me. And we were talking about her experience of using Windows 8, which I had put onto our desktop at home.
And you're still married?
Yeah. In the show notes I have there, it's however, I am sleeping on the couch a little more frequently because this last week, after, the major challenge last week, and you heard Ginny talking about it on the podcast. If you didn't, download that podcast. It's kind of interesting from that point of view. I wanted to have her on just simply as somebody who is not a highly tech person, using this new interface to see how she would get through it. And last week, we were primarily concerned about kind of learning the ropes. And it really worked pretty well for her until this past Tuesday when something happened behind the scenes. I'm not sure what, but the machine just locked up. And I had no way of getting around it because it's a new system. And there's all sorts of new ways of doing things. I really had I spent hours trying to find my way around the inside. I'm going to chronicle what I did there and put that on our homepage for people to just kind of follow along with rather than take up the time here on the air. Needless to say, tonight, just before we went on the air here this afternoon, Ginny went back to use the Windows 8 again because I cleaned it up and reinstalled it essentially on our desktop. And it's working fine, and she's getting along fine. We had one problem with a function with Internet Explorer 10, but some of those things are just kind of getting used to it.
So, no, wait. When you were at home, it didn't work, and when you left, it was working fine.
Yes, yes.
Okay, just wanted to understand the facts here.
Yeah, okay. Jenny says, what would I do if you weren't around? Because he goes, honey. Gets the frequent call from the other room with her. But I will chronicle that because I think it's kind of interesting for people out there, and we've had some questions start coming in. Matter of fact, Ed, we'll talk about that in the second hour of our program. I hope you can stick around for that. If you're on a station, by the way, on our network that doesn't play that second hour, go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and download that. And I just won't say any more to that, but I'm going to continue to chronicle this experience of using Windows 8 because I've become a hardcore Apple user, and I will continue with that. But as Gary, you and I have seen over the last 15 years, we really want to get our hands dirty in this new system, precisely so we can help other people who will run into the questions or problems like we are. We've already had a couple of questions that have come in from our listeners, and we'll talk about next hour.
No, you don't want to get your hands dirty. You have to get your hands dirty.
And you guys know me. If anything, it can get screwed up with me.
Up to your elbows, right?
Up to my elbows. So as I'm tearing my hair out, I think, okay, it's going to be good for somebody else down the line, if not for me right now.
And that's how we figured it out, right? And we've been on here on the air for almost 16 years now, approaching 16 years.
Brute force.
I want to ask. It's because we've made all these mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can help
you guys
miss them.
You guys all have smartphones, right?
Yes.
We have iPhones. Cal, you have an iPhone, Gary?
Yes.
Android.
You have an Android phone. I'm using a Windows phone right now, Windows 7 phone, and not the newer ones, Nokia. What do you use for your maps? This has become a big issue nowadays about what do you use for your maps. Hey, let's begin with you. When you want to find an address or go somewhere, what do you use on your phone?
Well, I use the integrated Google Maps application that's on here.
Because it's Android, that's part of the Google system. Okay.
Yeah. And it seems to work okay.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it drops out of navigation mode on me, and I, you know, or when I'm or try to put it back in the navigation mode, or
navigation is where it's kind of taking you step by step.
Step by step. Okay. You know, when I'm driving down the road, I want to glance at this thing. Say when I was driving out to Grand Valley to pick up my daughter. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a boring stretch of road there that I want to find out how much longer do I really have to go here.
Is it voice activated, by the way? Is it giving you
voice? You know, but I don't use that. I'm old fashioned. You know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. And I just like to plug in the address and pick it up, and I like zooming in and use my fingers to touch it and swipe it across.
Okay, so
that's
Google.
I really haven't messed with the voice.
Is it fair, guys, to say that Google is really the benchmark for mapping, really, in many ways?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Really? Without you know, because I really enjoyed the MapQuest, you know, much better as an interface, like Cal was saying earlier, or even Yahoo Maps, which allows you to redraw your destinations. Like, I don't want to take that.
Google does too. At least on the desktop it does.
Yeah, I want to take that line and I want to move it because I don't want
it, right? Exactly. Yes. I don't want to go that route.
But I do not have that ability on my smartphone.
So I used to use Google Maps on my iPhone when I had the 4S. But now that I moved up to the...
Oh, your iPhone 5.
iPhone 5, I can't get Google Maps, right? Because of what Apple did. Right?
It's possible they're coming back.
They might. And
but right now... What
probably will, but they're not there now. So now I have the mapping program that Apple has apologized to everybody because of what they've done. By the way, it's not as bad as they say.
No, it could
not
be.
But it's not as good as it's going to
be, right?
So I use MapQuest, and I think, Cal, you're using MapQuest too.
Now, MapQuest, isn't that the old Microsoft program? Am I right?
No,
it actually works.
Spoken like an Apple fanboy. All right.
No. MapQuest has been around on its own. It hasn't been a part of Microsoft, and I was just jabbing and wasn't being serious. MapQuest has been around for a while, and I've always used it on my computer. I was very happy with it. And when they put it on the phone, and I downloaded it, and it was doing turn by turn and talking to me while it was doing
really?
It.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And the best part about it, it's free.
Yeah.
So, it's the one that I use, and I have been using exclusively for quite some time.
You know, I didn't even think of that. I'm going to have to download that on my Android.
Yeah, I didn't know that it's on. Is it in the Google Play
Store? I'll look for it right now.
You look for it.
I like this, the voice-activated turn-by-turn.
Because that's exactly what I was missing on my iPhone, because I didn't have a 4S. I had an iPhone 4. Now, I went to the Windows 7. I've got a Nokia 900. And that, by the way, is full of the Nokia software, which is excellent mapping software. Nokia gives you things like right on the phone, you have things like Nokia Drive, which is turn by turn. And Eddie, it'll tell you how much more time you got to go, you know, everything. Although I did find, by the way, I was in rural Indiana, and I was trying to find a route from one place to the other. Well, the darn Nokia Drive wanted to take me at least an hour out of my way, and I could see literally a straight line from where I was to where I wanted to go, 2-lane highway, and I knew there were no obstructions on it, so I just ignored the Nokia Drive. And one of the problems I had was I could not remap the route. And whoever was, you're talking about remapping?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing for me. But they do have Nokia Maps on there, as well as Nokia Drive and this thing called Nokia City Lens. And now, and by the way, on our homepage at internetadvisor.net, under our takeaway, there is a free Nokia mapping service called here.net. And if you want to go there just to try it out, go to internetadvisor.net in the middle of the page there. You'll see the link to here.net. Go ahead.
You know, one of the things that bothered me about the mapping software is I want to grab the map and I want to change the route, but I can't do it when I'm driving. My wife
absolutely
will
not
physically hit me if I even try to glance at that thing.
Yeah.
And
my wife hasn't gotten that far yet, but she will.
She will. But I'd like the ability to be able to push a button and say, find nearest 7-Eleven. I am dying for a Slurpee or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that capability exists.
You can do that with Siri on the iPhone.
Good.
With what,
please? Good.
Siri.
So while you're en route,
yep.
In the middle of that's great.
So now the one thing that I did like about Google Maps, which was great, was that I was on campus on Notre Dame's campus. We were there for a lacrosse tournament, and I wanted to get from one building to another walking, and I could walk using the pedestrian view, and that's great. The one problem I did have is here, it showed me that I was sitting in your chair, so it's not that accurate. So
that is another thing we haven't talked about with a lot of these. Being able to choose public transport, walking, or driving is a great application.
Amazingly accurate.
So, folks, shop around. The guys are all on their phones right now trying out different mapping programs.
I just downloaded here.
Yep. You do that yourselves.
And MapQuest is available.
And when we come back after the break, we're going to be talking about Windows 8 and answering some questions that are already coming in from our listeners. We'll be answering some of the other ones that you've sent us by email as well. All that coming up on the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Please stick around for that as well.
Whether you're listening to us on one of our affiliates through Michigan Talk Radio or through our podcast, contact us by email if you have a question through our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Or put your question into one of our forums. Now let's rejoin the Internet Advisor team for the second hour of our podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown. We got a posse in here, a great group of experts, and that is Mr. Gary Baker, Edward L., and Cal Carson. We're going to be digging into some of the problems that you folks have presented to us through email. Going to internetadvisor.net and clicking on that Contact Us button, putting your questions in there, and we're going to get some solutions. We'll be talking with some of the people who have sent us email and talking with them about finding an answer to those questions. All coming up in this hour of the Internet Advisor. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Hour number two, Foster Brown with you. And during our live programs, when we're on our home station at WJR 760 AM in Detroit, we take calls from folks who are listening to us then, obviously, as we're broadcasting. But when we're in a podcast mode, as we are right now, there are a lot of folks out there who are listening to on our network, for instance. They're listening to us in all sorts of cities around the state of Michigan. And there are people who could be almost anywhere who have downloaded the podcast from our homepage or who have subscribed subscribed on iTunes to our podcast as well. In any case, what we've been inviting you folks to do, and these times when we're not live on our home station, is to send us an email. You do that by going to internetadvisor.net, clicking on Contact Us, and you have a form there you can put your question into. The other way to do it is to simply send an email to advisors@internetadvisor.net. Now, we have somebody with us right now who sent us a question that was a really interesting one because of all the different things that it opened up. And, Tony,
Yeah. Welcome
to the Internet Advisor.
Well, thank you for being there.
Thank you so much for sending your question, and it was a very interesting one, I think, because it touched on a whole bunch of things. Why don't you fill us in with kind of a very quick, like 60-second thumbnail on what happened to you?
Well, I went to download the Microsoft updates, and everything downloaded, and then when it says installing, it shut off, turned back on, and went to the blue screen of death that said configuring updates, and then the percentage showed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and it stopped cold at 12.
All right, now we should say that your computer you were on, tell us what the computer was that you were on.
It's a HP Pavilion G7.
When did you buy this?
Last week.
All right.
Oh, really? So it's brand new?
I've been going through this all week long. I must, like I told you, the other lady, I must have gone through 14, 15 people until I got a person that could speak English in the Philippines.
So you have a Windows 8 operating system on it.
Right.
It came installed on it, right?
Yes, sir.
Now,
Yep. Was
that, pardon me, was that Windows 8 or Windows 8 Pro?
It just says Windows 8.
It's not, we should tell folks, that's not Windows 8 Pro. There are some other bells and whistles that you get with Windows 8 Pro.
Right. Oh. But Windows 8 should still work fine. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And the problem happened with when it was trying to do its updates, trying to download updated drivers.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I'll tell you how to fix it.
Okay.
Well, so what happened then was that you went to HP, the company that made the computer, and you spent many hours on the phone with them, and they told you it was basically a Microsoft problem.
Right. I called Microsoft,
and
they said for $99.99, they'll take control of my computer and do diagnostics on it. And then somebody else told me that it was one of them sites that says Microsoft that they were looking at, that they gave me the number, that was an outside vendor, not actually the Microsoft people.
Yes.
So I've got the Microsoft people number here, too. And,
okay.
I was luckily to get a guy named Francis, and if Francis was here, I'd buy him lunch for the rest of the week.
Now, this was somebody in the U.S.
No, he's in the Philippines.
Oh, beg your pardon, in the Philippines. Yeah. Now, was he from Microsoft?
Yeah, he said he worked for Microsoft for four years.
Okay.
And this is a brand new fix, so I guess it's supposed to be product manufacturer, OEM-wide, I don't know.
OEM, right. Okay, now, so the issue is you've been kind of like a ping pong ball batted back and forth between HP and Microsoft.
Well, no, I only called the Microsoft people once. And then they told me that to go back to HP because HP supposedly blessed this and certified it and baptized it, and they've bought it.
Now, we have to ask a question. Mm-hmm. Has the problem been solved?
Yes.
How did the problem
I will tell you how to solve it, because it's going to save a lot of people a lot of problems, because you're going to get a bunch of calls on here.
Okay, before we do this, I want you to give us the answer, Tony. We're going to take a little break, but before we get there, Ed, when you first saw this, Cal, you, I think, as well, and Gary saw this and commented on it. What were some of your thoughts initially?
Some of my thoughts is that I didn't think it was a Microsoft issue, otherwise we would have heard it more of the problems. And I thought, if anything, it was a Hewlett-Packard issue because they packaged the computer and they have to pay for Microsoft a certain amount of dollars to get drivers. All OEMs do. So when what they do is they package the drivers post-Windows 8 install, and they put them on their product afterwards.
Cal,
they're not really certified.
You're a good simplifier. What is a driver? Just quickly, what is a driver?
It's a little tiny program that's inside the operating system that allows the computer to talk, the computer hardware to talk to the hardware on the device, in this case a printer, back and forth.
Right. It's just instructions. It's called the DLL, the Dynamic Link Library. Am I right?
A driver is different than
a DLL. Oh, I beg your pardon. Okay, good. Okay.
So, it's basically just a little sub-program that allows the computer to be able to send the signal to the printer and interpret it as...
Yeah, it could be a printer, it could be a keyboard, it could be the
USB,
monitor, USB ports.
Anything. Okay, so...
And we've seen this problem with HP and other OEMs in the past when Microsoft's come out with the new...
Not just Microsoft. This happens with anybody who comes up with a new operating system.
So I looked out on the different forums, and I didn't see anything in the Microsoft forums that said there was a particular problem with Microsoft.
Consistently seeing this come
right.
up. Okay.
There are all sorts of little problems, but right. people have all sorts of little problems because of the way they have configured their computers and
whatnot, this is a brand
right?
new operating system, too.
Right. So then I went to HP, and I didn't see anything there either.
Hmm.
So then it led me to believe that maybe there was a problem specifically with Tony's computer. Right.
Mm.
I saw a couple other people that had similar problems and one that had the same problem. But there were so many other different things that you could never really tell. Right.
Okay, so,
it didn't seem a preponderance of, right. of any one problem.
So Tony's conclusion was like, I was going to take this thing back to the store.
Right.
Which he should have. Right.
Did you take it back to the store?
No, because they finally got it fixed, and I'll tell you how they fixed it.
Excellent. And folks, we're going to leave you with a cliffhanger there. We'll be back in just a moment to continue our conversation with Tony. I think it's an important one because of this brand new operating system, Windows 8. And a lot of you who go out to buy a new computer are going to find if you're buying a PC, that's all that's on it. So stick with us. We're going to be finding some answers, perhaps to your problems as well. Well, thank you so much for being with us here and allowing us to be with you, as a matter of fact. My name is Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson in studio here answering our listeners' questions. But the most fun part about this part of the program for me is when the listeners help us to solve a problem. And Tony is with us. Tony gave us an email this week that actually had all of us kind of chiming in on it, Tony. Me, because I'm involved in using Windows 8 now and kind of working with some of the challenges. And I had a really challenging week this last week behind
the scenes.
According
to HP, you're going to hear about it a lot because they said that they've had many, 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 many problems with this.
Okay, now
I'm going to tell you how to fix it.
Okay, let me just quickly recap. Tony told us that he had got a brand new HP computer, a month ago?
Last week.
It came preloaded with Windows 8. Again, that's not Windows 8 Pro, and maybe we can talk about that later on. But I mean, he went to do some updates on it, and he got this signal that said, screen that said it was updating and it would freeze at 12%.
Configuring
the updates. It would freeze at 12% and wouldn't go any further. Now,
even after I shut it off and turned it back on, yep. I got that blue screen of death that said that.
It would still lock up with that.
Now,
right.
Tony, do you have automatic updates set, or is it just notification that there's an update available?
No, I had it set at the time.
Okay. And now they probably told you don't set it as automatic. And
no, they didn't say that because they fixed the problem with what I'm going to tell you how to fix it.
Go ahead. Go for it right now.
Okay, they said to go into the device manager,
mm-hmm.
and then on the drivers and audio display, mm-hmm. there's two drivers there that are bad.
Oh.
And to delete them. And I've called about, like I said, five or six times, and mm-hmm. everybody was clicking on the wrong thing to delete. They were doing something else, an IEDATAATAPI controller or something.
Right, that's your power controller.
Oh, the attachment control, right, yep. The power controller.
But anyway, that's what you have to do. If you go in there to get to the device
wow.
manager and delete these audio drivers and displays, and then go back to Windows updates and say download it, and start your machine up, and it worked.
Now, Windows Update, you will find, by the way, folks, if you go into the start screen on Windows 8 where the tiles are, go to the right-hand side and pull up the charms, go to the bottom, go to Settings. At the very bottom of the settings, it's your PC settings.
Right.
And that is where it'll pull up on the left-hand side of your start screen then a whole list of different things. And that's where you would go down. I think it's at the very bottom. There's another thing called list
top,
there.
At the top, I think, where it says Updates.
Yeah, either top or bottom, it says Updates. That's where you would then set it. Now, Gary asked a question before. Do you have to tell it to do anything special? Or can you say, for instance, just automatically update?
When you get to Microsoft, when you get to their update thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I know. He just said to click on it and to update the program.
Okay.
The progress bar went for about 20 minutes. And then when it stopped, I shut the machine. After deleting the audio and display drivers, turned it back on, and it's working beautifully.
Oh, now, pardon me. This is the audio and display drivers.
Audio and displays.
Now, did they say that that this HP was loaded with the wrong version, or there's extras? I mean,
they screwed it up over there.
Oh, so it, okay.
This was AP saying this was a bad driver.
Right.
Right, or the wrong driver.
The wrong driver, whichever one, yeah.
So we, Foster, you and I had the same problem when we went to Windows XP with mm-hmm. HP, but those were print drivers. So
absolutely.
This is an audio driver, and, And those should have been tested a little bit better by HP, but it sounds like they now have it fixed and have a
No, but they don't know about it. This guy here that I spoke with just now got the whatever it was is that they told him to do correctly.
The fix. Oh, he just got the fix in.
Yeah. Yep.
So now they're, because it's not anywhere on the HP site yet that I can find. Yeah. I've been searching for Windows 8 update problems, audio driver problems, display driver problems, specific to the update of in Windows 8, and that's been, and I just can't find it on the HP
site. Right, and it may be particular to this batch of model number.
Right.
But I wanted to ask you, what's your overall experience, I mean, besides the problems you've been having, what do you think of the Windows 8 interface?
Oh, I love it.
That's good to know.
You know, when you click on the tiles, all you have to do is type it on the bottom. You don't have to fish around to find anything.
Mm-hmm.
It'll go right to it.
Type anywhere on that start page, and it'll take you to your – you're talking about searching for things?
Yeah, if you just press the charms and put the control panel, it'll go right to it.
Right.
You don't have to go to the settings or anything over there.
Did you find learning that new way of navigating around there a bit challenging?
Not for me, but I grew up with them.
Okay, now did you do any reading ahead of time? I'm curious to find, you know, to learn about the different ways of navigating in Windows 8.
Yeah, there's an email that they sent me, and I can forward it to you if you'd like.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
It was an email for what, from Hewlett Packard?
Yeah, how to run Windows, or a brief run-through
like,
of it.
Like a tutorial or something?
Yeah, Cal, go ahead.
Now, before Windows 8, were you using Windows 7?
Yes.
What compelled you to go to 8?
My Toshiba blew up.
Yeah, a new computer.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's only because of a new computer. Otherwise, you were happy with the previous operating system?
Windows 7, yeah, it was fine. As a matter of fact, there was this pavilion that they still had there with 7 on it, and I decided to go with 8.
Where did you go to buy it, by the way, Tony?
I went to Wrong Buy, formerly known as Best Buy. Radio Shack, and then I just happened to take my mother to Walmart, and I wanted a 17-inch screen.
Uh-huh.
So it was the first time we were there, and if you opened up a charge account that day, you could get $20 off your purchase within 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked by the computer department and saw this computer there.
Mm-hmm.
So I charged it to get the $20 off,
uh-huh.
And that's how the allegory began.
That's interesting. So this is Walmart that you bought this from, right?
Walmart, yeah.
Okay. Now, why this particular machine? I'm just curious. Why this particular machine?
Well, because every time I call Toshiba, they want to charge me money to do something, and I told them to go bag it.
So. Yeah. You know, this whole business, we talked about this before. When you're buying a machine, the service, Cal, I think we talked about that before, service becomes almost as important as the machine itself.
Or more.
It's
part of the total buying experience.
Exactly.
Not just, a lot of people are going looking for that cheap hardware. I mean, it's a good quality machine, but they want to get the hardware cheap. And that's fine and dandy if you happen to be Ed Rudell and you know what you're doing. But if you're not totally versed in that type of situation, then it's important to not only just shop for the machine, but also shop for appropriate service for that machine. And one of the best ways to find out that sort of thing is to ask your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers, where do they get their computers and how do they, you know, what type of service are they getting from it? And that helps you to be able to make an appropriate decision.
I was curious, why did you choose HP? Was it it's a brand that you've worked on?
Because
it's
awesome. It's the only one I could find with a 17-inch screen.
Yeah. Ah. Yeah. And as the HP employee isn't here saying, it's awesome, man.
Oh, you got an HP employee.
Two of them. Looking at two of them.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what.
It's a big company. It does a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I was through techie hell there for all last week. Well, I only have 15 days. You don't realize that to return any electronics to Walmart. So the calendar was running.
I got you.
And I called and I called and I called and I called. And, you know, when I get one of those guys that speak Chinese, I just hang up and hope to keep calling until I get one that speaks American.
Tony, I'm so glad that you found a solution and that you could share it with the listeners here. Tony,
now you want me to email you this?
Yes, please. Please email me that connection. And what I'll do is I'll put that up for our folks to be able to see as well, the instructions on using Windows 8. Nice going, buddy. Thank you so much for your help.
Oh, thank you.
All right, take care. That's one of our listeners, Tony, giving us a big help. We will essentially let you know that solution again. If you happen to have an HP, desktop, which has the...
A laptop.
Pardon me, it was a laptop. I'm sorry. That had the... was having this problem with the update stalling. He was saying to go into Device Manager, and then under the drivers, look for the audio and display drivers and delete them. And then I'm guessing, Ed, when you reboot, it would... Find them again?
It would automatically, the plug-and-play operating system.
Repopulate.
If they're not there, then they'll download them for you.
They'll download them for you. Okay.
And what we would suggest is that on any kind of operating system or any application, don't turn on automatic updates.
What?
Have them.
Really?
I will not do that. What really? I will do is ask for them to notify me that the updates are there so that I can decide if I want to update or not.
Ed, what do you think of that?
Well, I mean, because of the zero-day security and stuff like that, that's a tough call. Yeah. But when you have a new operating system like this and OEM vendors are shipping out new products, you might stumble across a problem like this.
Yep.
So maybe for the short term, do the notification, but I'm all in favor of doing these automatic updates.
You are or aren't?
I am.
Okay.
In the long term, automatic updates for me.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in all the time. So if it's zero, if they're trying to fix a zero-day problem, virus, then I'll do it pretty quickly.
The doctors agree to disagree on this point, but be careful with that. Hey, back to take some more folks who have been having some problems. Thanks so much for allowing us to join you with the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Edward Allen, Cal Carson. And just by the way, I want to thank a couple people who are our unsung heroes here. That's Annie Nichols, who was our lady of the phones. Thank you, Annie, for she's a wonderful lady, got a great smile. And Rich Luzinski, our excellent engineer. Thank you so much for being behind the window there and helping us. And now let's step back, and we have another caller with us right now, somebody who sent us an email during the week. And Emily, thank you very much for being with us here on the Internet Advisor.
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing, Emily?
Okay, how are you?
Good. Delighted to be able to talk with you. You sent us an email, but we thought we'd get back with you, in touch with you through the phones here while we are doing our podcast. You have had a problem with a nasty virus that showed up on your computer that you just haven't been able to get rid of. And I understand it. What it does is it redirects you?
Yes. It's nasty. I've tried everything.
What does it do? Just so people would understand, what does it look like? What does it do? How did you first see it?
Okay, say, for example, you type in an address where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Say you want to look for, you type in something you want, and the list comes up, and you click on the link, and instead of taking you where you want to go, it takes you where it wants you to go.
It's called hijacking. And not unusual for a lot of these viruses that get into your computer, sometimes less harmful in some ways, because some of them can do terrible damage. But in any case, we want to try to...
certainly annoying.
It is annoying.
It's terrible because you have to keep trying and trying. Right. It can take you 10 minutes to get someplace.
Right. Okay, we're going to try to see if we can find a way of getting this nasty thing out. Eddie, any thoughts on this to start off?
First, how long has this been on the computer? How long?
About... just under 3 weeks.
So it has been quite a while. What operating system are you running? Is it?
I'm running XP.
Oh, you are. Okay.
Yeah, it's my work computer. So.
Okay.
Really? And they're still running XP.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I mean, the first thought that comes to mind when I run across something like this, especially with Windows XP, is to perform a system restore. And that's.
I did that.
And you went back 3 weeks.
I went back. I've
Four
done
weeks.
It a couple of times. I've gone back at least a month.
Okay.
Okay.
And that did not take care of the problem.
Okay. So it sounds like it's going to the registry, you think?
Well,
and I should tell you, I'm running McAfee, and McAfee neither finds it in its scans, nor did it stop it.
Now, what browser are you using? Internet Explorer or Firefox?
Google Chrome.
So you are, and it's happening in Google Chrome as well.
Hmm.
Oh yeah. So, and I've tried Firefox, I've tried Internet Explorer.
Good.
It's showing up everywhere.
Okay, good. Well, I want to say good because you have tried a number of things, Emily. I want to commend you on that. You try the system restore, which Ed, you were saying.
Right.
If something happens to your computer and you're a Windows machine, if you're an XP or you're in Windows 7 or whatever, try to do the system restore because that often, if it's done quickly, like that day, can get you around the problem. Now, however...
As soon as the first instance of it showed up, that's the first thing I did.
There you
really?
Go. Well, beautiful. You did the right thing.
You did.
This thing got you good.
Yes,
but you've done everything right. You used alternate browsers as well, so congratulations on that part.
Okay, we might as well have fun with Miss Smarty Pants then.
Uh-oh.
No, don't have fun with me.
He does it to all of us.
I believe you probably have ran something like Malwarebytes against it.
I have tried. First thing I did was I did some research, mm-hmm. and I tried everything that it suggested, and then I went on your website, mm-hmm. and you have an entire page devoted to this, and mm-hmm. I've tried everything that you recommended on
including Combo Fix?
Yes.
Wow.
And you still are having the problem.
I am still having the problem.
When you tried these ideas that we have on our website at internetadvisor.net, did you start your machine up in safe mode, or did you start
yes.
it up regularly? Okay.
Yes,
boy, she's
safe
good.
Mode.
Well, the one thing I'm going to ask, oh, boy, what was it? Boy, that just went out of my head. I cannot believe that.
It's a problem having these old texts in
your ADDs.
Oh, good. I'll use that as an excuse.
Okay. No, the one thing, have you tried connecting to the internet somewhere else other than at home?
Well, it's my work computer.
Right. So does it only happen at work?
Yes.
Okay. But is it a laptop?
No, it's a desktop.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So there goes that idea. Okay. Because, you know, there was a virus that came out about 3 years ago that would reprogram your Linksys, D-Link, Cisco router, whatever, and it would grab the most common off-the-shelf, and it would change the settings in the router, and it was a redirector. So it would send you to the website.
So it wouldn't affect the computer. It went after the router.
Yeah,
Then with that idea in mind, are there other people at your work with computers?
Yes, there are, and none of them have been affected.
Okay, so it does sound like it's a rebuild. I'd back up your data and have your IT department possibly just rebuild it. That might be the quickest way, and your computer will be so much faster if they do reinstall it.
Hey, how about this rather than
I was kind of trying to avoid having that done, but yeah.
Well, you've done it. Wait, Emily, why would you avoid having that done?
Wait a minute. I got an idea that I got from you guys years ago when I used to listen to the show on a regular basis. What about if she creates another ID under XP and see if that problem still happens with Internet Explorer under that new ID?
That's a good idea. Well, it happens with all the other browsers, but she could certainly try that.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Do you understand what he's saying by creating a new ID? A new user? A new user?
Oh, on the desktop? I'm on the computer?
Yes, you go into the computer.
Just starting from scratch, but on the same computer.
Yes, well, what you do is you go into, you're an administrator on this, I'm going to imagine, are you?
Well, it depends how her computer's set up. If she's set up to log into a domain, she's not going to be able to log in, you know, to another account. But if it's a small company and she just has her own username on there, then she would be able to create a new user account on there. Like Cal's saying, by going to Control Panel under Users and then creating a new user account and then logging in with that user account, because it's only your user account on that PC that's infected.
Oh, yeah, that's a thought I hadn't thought of.
You know, as a matter of fact, I had that this week with Windows 8, that I had to go to a third user before I could get into the machine because the other two were corrupted.
Yeah. Now, it's possible.
That's excellent, Cal.
But if this is a corporate computer, which you said it is, and then you log into a domain and you're not logging into the PC, and a lot of people don't know the difference, that you could actually make your computer so it doesn't work on the network anymore, and then you'd have to call your technical support people. So you got to be careful with that because it is a corporate computer or a business computer.
Yeah, I would just be logging into the computer. I'm not logging into
You're not logging into a domain. Okay.
There you go. I like Cal's idea. Thanks, Cal.
So if you want, and Emily, you are a super one here. You have tried all these other things. If you want to mess around with it one more step, try creating that new user and then seeing if under that new user you have the same problem with the browsers, because it may be only identified then with that particular user. If not, then save yourself the grief, you know, back up the documents and things that you need there, including maybe your mail settings, like your PST file?
I back everything up at least once a week.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, one thing you could do that might ease your burden when you have to reset up your computer is you can run in Windows XP the file and transfer wizard.
Yes. So, I've used it several times.
Okay, so use that and then store the file and transfer wizard's data onto the external hard drive. And that way, just in case, when you come back in or when you rebuild your computer to Windows XP, it should be set up very similar to the same printers and a lot of the settings, even the mail settings.
I'd be a little bit wary bringing over something like maybe the app data folder in that particular case, because the problem is with that ID, it's probably going to lurk in there, where bringing documents or music or photos and that sort of thing over should be fine.
Right. Oh, that's true. Yeah, so just do that as a precautionary in case you're desperate and you got to get some program working, or you can't get your mail working. Then you could try running.
I'm dying of curiosity, Emily. Why did you do all of this as an employee and not just say to the IT department, gentlemen, my machine's messed up, fix it?
Well, because the company I work for, we have 35 salespeople who are all independent contractors. And so they all have different operating systems, different computers, whatever. And we don't have an IT person on site. So pretty much I kind of have become the person who fixes things.
Sounds like it.
And so I guess my natural inclination is just to fix it.
So if you're you are the IT department.
Well, I think you should give yourself a raise.
I don't get paid to do IT, but yeah, I kind of am the default IT person.
I think you should give yourself a raise, and if you buy a new computer, or have your boss buy you a new computer with either Windows 7 or Windows 8 on there, that you'll be so much more productive.
Yes.
Yeah, and it'll be so much faster.
Monday morning I'll go in and I'll wheedle Windows 8 and a new computer out of them.
I think that's an excellent idea. It'll run faster and all sorts of other things will be better. The only other thing would be better would be to get an Apple computer.
Well, I mean, considering the fact she said they use all different platforms there, man, I go wheedle me a brand new Mac.
I knew you were going to say that. And by the way, I would be with him on that. It would be a lot of fun. Although learning Windows 8, by the way, I think it's a cutting edge of the future. And I think it would be worth your doing it. Since you like to play with computers and do well. Emily, you are a superstar. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for your help.
All right. Take care. I wish you could have waved a magic wand for her. Back to talk about some more questions and get some more answers. It's been so good having you with us here for this Internet Advisor podcast and allowing us to be with you in your car, in your home, at work, wherever you happen to be. Thank you so much. Maybe walking the dog with this on the headset. My name is Foster Brown. Thanks so much, by the way, Gary Baker and Ed Riddell and Cal Carson. Thank you so much for being part of this program. It's always fun having you guys in here. You know, the title of the program I gave was Forecast Cloudy with Touchiness, and we haven't talked about it yet. Maybe we'll talk about this next week about touch screens and how important they are in computers and whether you want to have one on your computer, you know, your computer be able to use a touch screen as well as, you know, the mouse and the keyboard. And, we'll talk about that more later because I wanted to get to a couple more questions this last week that came in because they are really, I think, they're very simple. Two of them are pretty simple, but I think that a lot of people have questions. One came from...
The questions are always simple. It's the answers that we have trouble with.
I guess the answers of these are not... you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. This came from Evelyn, and her question was a very simple one. Is how do I transfer a file from Adobe Reader, which is a PDF file, to Microsoft Word? Kelly, you want to start?
No.
All right.
Okay.
Kel knows
this. You did give her a nice answer.
Well, I'll start off first by defining for the listeners out there. A PDF stands for Portable Document Format, which is a format that was created by Adobe, and it allows you to be able to read a document on just about any platform out there, whether it's Windows or Mac or whatever, Linux, and the whole shoot match. And what she wanted to do was to take which is normally a document that you cannot alter. It comes to you and you can read it, but you can't change it like you can do with a Word.
Unless you have Adobe Acrobat.
You'd have to have Adobe Acrobat and assuming that the person who sent you that document didn't put a password on.
Right.
But there are some readers out on the net now that you can download. And a matter of fact, the one that I sent, told her to take a look at was a reader that you can download for 14 days for free to try it out. And it's I believe it's called PDF to Word, believe it or not. And it allows you to take and convert a PDF to a Word document, where then after which you can take and manipulate whatever way you want, just like a Word document.
But they also end up costing you, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Eventually it's going to cost you a price.
Doesn't Microsoft have an
XML?
A program you can download for that? I thought it was
With Office 2010, I think, or 7 even, it had the ability to...
probably write PDFs.
Yeah, you could write PDFs.
You can't necessarily
open an existing
and modify.
Thank you, Cam.
And you can take a Word document and create a PDF out of it.
Correct.
Very easily.
Yes. Yes.
And not the other way around.
Yeah, you can do it natively in the Windows operating system. You can do it natively in the Mac operating system.
And that's just simply save as, and then
PDF.
You know, right, you just right. go search and it says PDF. You click on that.
Now, my wife had problems with friends that didn't know how to download the Adobe Reader, or they had an older version and they couldn't do it. So what she did as a quick solution is she did a print screen of her computer with Adobe Reader and then pasted it in a Word document and sent it to the person, because she just wanted them to have those couple paragraphs so they could read them, not that they wanted to edit them or anything. So that was another quick solution, is to copy, print screen, and then paste it in a Word document.
But she actually needs to manipulate and change the content of the document, and by using a converter like PDF to Word, that's one of the ones they could use.
By the way, if you're getting Windows 8, I just noticed here there's a PDF Reader Metro app that you can install.
Notice it says Reader.
Yes, it's a Reader. Right,
yes.
Exactly.
Yes, it is a Reader.
Exactly.
Yes.
But other ones that are down here, I know PDF Viewer, again, a viewer.
Yes.
And it looks like, it basically, though, if you're going to do any manipulating of the file itself, you have to pay for that.
Anytime you're going to change it and manipulate it, it's going to cost you some money. And you could do it the full price way using something like Adobe Acrobat, which is full-fledged and can do everything with a PDF that you want. Or you can use this one that'll give you a chance to be able to convert it back and forth.
And the reason for that is Adobe created the PDF format,
right,
and anybody that wants to take in and manipulate PDFs has to have a license from Adobe.
Correct.
Right.
Right, exactly. And I'm trying to find out the cost on PDF, on the Adobe Acrobat. I'm not finding it right now.
But it's more than Microsoft Word, I think.
Yes, it is. It's fairly pricey.
It's like $300 to $600.
Is it that much?
Yeah, it's pricey.
Wow.
And they don't discount. They don't give student discounts Microsoft.
Do.
Well, a little bit. But
There are educational discounts that are available, but not to the drastic.
And if I was taking an educated guess, it probably wouldn't be too much.
Well, by the way,
but it's not like Microsoft really discounts dramatically. And
oh,
so
my
Apple.
God, they should be able to.
And Apple does too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, those are two really great companies that do help the educator and the students. But Adobe, not so much.
Well, it depends. You know, when you look at the breadth of what an Adobe product can do and all the features and bells and whistles, and also remember that the audience for an Adobe product is significantly smaller than a Microsoft Office audience.
They don't quite make as much money.
Yeah,
so you
have to, and they put a lot into it. I mean, my God, Photoshop has completely changed the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, you know, that's a very robust application. So, you know, yes, they can't knock off as much as others, but you know, they do knock something off.
And they have created the light version, which is with Photoshop Elements for something like that. And that is cheaper.
Yes.
So that works.
Is.
So there's ways.
Yeah. If you go to the Adobe site, you'll get more information on that. I'm having trouble making it work for me right now. But in any case, you can go there and they have, pardon me, under a separate heading, PDF converter in there. Now, let's go to another question that was asked. And because we've had this so many times throughout the years, people begin to find their computers slowing down. And they want to know, I want to get this. Windows, in particular, PCs have this problem of kind of building up what they call cruft. You know, if it's been there for a while, it's gotten a lot of files and broken pieces, and it starts slowing down. So we have Joe wrote us and said, do any of the PC tune-up programs work? If so, which is the best? My system is operating at a crawl, and viruses don't appear to be the problem. So it's not that I got a virus in there. And we hear this so often from PC users. What do you guys, how do you just respond to that? Because we get this question so many times. Ed?
Well, you know, I really don't endorse any type of PC cleanup utility or speed up. I always do it the old-fashioned way, using the Microsoft tools or other utilities. First, I'll delete all temporary internet files. I'll download a utility called CCleaner. And that'll delete a bunch of log files and startup files.
Another one like that is Glarity Utilities, Glary Utilities, pardon me.
Yeah. And are both those utilities free?
Free.
Those are free.
So I've not used the second one. CCleaner has been around for a long time. But.
Yeah. The one thing I also do is I'll have the person go through the control panel, add, remove programs or programs and features, and uninstall things that they're not using anymore.
There are toolbars in there, for instance, you'll find sometimes.
Toolbars, old printers that they bought. You know, I mean, every time you power up your computer, if you still have that Lexmark that you threw in the garbage or recycled 3 years ago, you know Windows is still loading that every time you start up your computer.
So then it has an active in memory. Our old favorite is go to msconfig. And by the way, even in Windows 8, you can get to msconfig. There's a way of getting to the startup there. Go ahead, Ed.
I thought you just threw me off.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So download Malwarebytes, of course, because you have good antivirus program, but have you really used a scanner that just goes in there? You know, check your disk for disk errors. So go in into your My Computer, you right mouse click on your C drive, and you select properties on your C drive, and you want to go into the Tools tab and check your disk drive for errors. I ran across the computer. It was running fine, but they said it was running a little slow. I found that and Microsoft still doesn't do this, and I have to check and see if Windows 8 doesn't. Still doesn't say, hey, your disk drive has experienced several errors. Maybe you should go run a utility to check it. They still don't do that. So I ran a check on the disk drive. Sure enough, it sped up their computer enormously.
And that would be in particular with an older computer. You've had it 4 years, maybe something like that. The actual physical drive can have some problems, and that can be used to clean it up as well. One thing I think we would say generally, gentlemen, don't mess with the registry.
Yes. Do not mess with
unless you know what you're doing.
Yes, unless you know what you're doing.
And now here's one other really quick and easy tip to do. Clean up your desktop. If you've got 10,000 icons on your desktop, get rid of the ones you don't use, consolidate the rest ones in folders, and it'll make the machine run faster.
One final one, get a can of the compressed air. Be careful about where you spray it. But anyway, open it up, get the dust bunnies out, because sometimes your CPU is heating up because of hair and dust bunnies and things like that in it. So if you haven't cleaned it out in a bit, even with laptops, you can blow a little bit of that out. All right, guys. Thank you so much for your help. Hey, we'll be back next week with some more good stuff. Well, matter of fact, we'll be talking about answering the question for Cal. Are you a human? No, actually, that's a program we'll be talking about. Have a great week.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor, where since 1998, we've been helping non-geeks to find answers to their questions and to make their journey on the Internet a much more enjoyable one. If you have any questions you'd like answered directly by our team, please go to our homepage at InternetAdvisor.net and fill in the Contact Us forum, or join one of the forums that are there on the Internet Advisor. And don't forget, the toolkit is available with Ed's excellent advice, full of all sorts of information and free software to help you. Don't forget to visit us on Facebook and like our site so that you can catch all the news that we post there during the week. The door is always open for you at InternetAdvisor.net, on our Facebook page, and through Twitter. Safe surfing, and we'll see you again soon.